Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast, and on this Lunar New Year holiday break and in the Year of the Pig, oink oink, we are delighted to bring you a podcast focusing in on China. We're going to look at see how the economy is evolving and the broad health of the consumer and the changing tastes. And on that basis, here's just a short clip from our guest fund manager, Dale Nichols of Fidelity, discussing the smartphone market.
I don't want to downplay Apple, but you know, the recent disappointment in China being blamed on the slowdown. You know, I think the competition is doing a better job. You know, you've got the Huawei's and Sessions of the world, which have as good, if not better, hardware specs at a cheaper price.
Okay, for some more insights into the Chinese policy evolution and the stock market appeal and Dale's investment preferences, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation, which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we're going to be focusing in on China. On that basis, delighted to welcome our expert guest, Dale Nichols, the lead manager, among other responsibilities at Fidelity, the lead manager on their China Special Situations Investment Trust. Dale, thanks for joining us. Where are you joining us from? Are you on visits over from Hong Kong?
That's right. That's right. The timing could be better. It's Chinese New Year, while all my other colleagues are off, celebrating somewhere. I'm here grueling away, but that's fine.
Well, we'll try and make this as pleasurable experience for you as possible, then, Dale. But so the focus is China. I thought we'd have a sensible thread would be discussing the macro situation.
Right.
There is some understanding that China's trying to ease, but we'll get your interpretation. Sure. Of by how much. Of course, the trade is very much front and center. The trade issues with the US very much front and center in investors' minds. And then let's get into the market. What does that mean? Is the market cheap? Is the market fairly priced? And
sure.
Then where within the market you see the opportunities.
Yep.
So we'll start then with the macro and that very question. You know, what is your interpretation of the level of stimulus that China is delivering? I guess the market consensus is it's not as much as 16.
Yeah.
Does it need to do as much? You know, how helpful is it?
Yeah. First of all, I think there's no question that growth is slowing. I mean, there's still overall relatively high levels, but growth is definitely slowing, and the mood has changed. The mood on the ground. I was in Shenzhen last week. You know, meeting with kind of more internationally focused companies. Growth has clearly slowed. I think the biggest factor behind that is slowing credit growth, which is obviously a conscious decision to bring down and reduce the leveraging, particularly in the areas of shadow banking. And that's a process started last year, and we're seeing the effects of that, which is positive for the long term. I think this has to happen. There has to be that very balancing away from sort of reliance on investment, particularly debt-led investment, towards consumption. So again, you feel it on the ground.
I heard the sort of terminology, they're shutting the back door, opening the front door, in that, they're closing down a bit on shadow banking.
Absolutely.
But are opening the front door.
They're Agreed.
Still encouraging lending.
Yep. More from the banks. Yeah,
from the banks.
Yeah.
So it's not all sort of doom and gloom.
So I agree. And there's a definite reaction that you're seeing in terms of liquidity. So the RRR cuts that you're seeing coming through. You talked about infrastructure. We're seeing signs that infrastructure is picking up and infrastructure investment is picking up, and that's coming through in bond issuance, through local government financing vehicles, etc.
So if local governments are raising money, essentially,
yes.
That's because they've got an infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Project to
but our, my sense is that it's much more, it's not like post-GFC. We had massive, the $4 trillion infrastructure program, which, is part of the factor behind the big increase in debt. It's more targeted. It's more about completing projects that are already underway and more targeted. So I think you'll see more of it, but really not to the same level. There's still, I do think still that deleveraging priority is still there. But you know, you're clearly seeing loosening across both on the monetary side from a liquidity perspective, but also the fiscal side, and even for the consumer. We've got some tax cuts that are kicking in as well. So you're starting to see I think an increasing awareness of the need to boost more growth.
So I mean, we'll get into markets in a moment, but that type of stimulus, the makeup of that stimulus, is slightly different. Then it's not of scale, also it's a bit more consumer targeted.
Yep.
So I guess as we get into how you're positioning, is that the backdrop? Is that how you're assessing the situation? Yeah, is that feeding into some of your investment decisions?
In a way, yes. But my focus for the trust has really always been about the consumer. I think that's still the biggest and easiest theme to invest in China. It's just the natural development of the middle class, increasing penetration across a range of categories. That's the biggest driver, and it helps, obviously, that the government also wants that same goal. They're looking to achieve that rebalancing as well, and the policies are reflecting that. But it's pretty safe, a pretty safe bet. I mean, whatever the final growth number is for China, I think you can assume safely that consumption's growing faster. And a high single-digit growth environment, it's not a bad environment, with stocks, sold off relatively cheap. That's my sort of view is consistent. That's a good stock picking environment, particularly when you've got a lot of structural change that's happening and that continues.
Well, we'll get into that in just a moment. But that macro picture then doesn't look quite so worrying, even though there is, like you said, the mood has changed. There are still investment opportunities. On the trade front, I mean, how are you assessing that situation? Of course, we can't expect you to have sort of an inside track into what's happening in Washington.
Sure.
And even if you did, he's a bit of an unpredictable character. But, how are you feeling about that? And can you sort of quantify that at all, or is it too subjective?
I think it's hard to call, but, it seems like things are starting to move in the right direction. For me, it's kind of... I find it easier to predict the China position in terms of how things are going forward. I think they're commercial and willing to, there's stuff as part of this deal they'd be willing to do tomorrow. When it comes to buying more soybeans, buying more LNG, that sort of thing, I think they're ready to do that. On the tougher issues around, forced technology transfer and IP and that sort of thing, I sense change there as well. And you see that coming through. They've already moved on, changing the restrictions around some of the JVs. Increasing talk of IP protection. I think, a big thing the US side is...
Tesla are in there, aren't they?
It's been approved, for them to go ahead and produce there. And that, as you say...
Not under a JV.
Exactly right, 100% owned. I think, given the experience of the past, a big focus from the US side is around enforcement. So deals have been made in the past. It's questionable whether they've, the actual implementation has been there. So I think that's a big focus. It's a little bit harder to predict the US side. I find the negotiating group quite diverse.
Quite, yeah.
So you've got, some people within that group have been at this a long time and have, quite firm views about, really changing the system significantly. And then you've got other sort of members of the group that I think are more looking for a deal. With Mr. Trump, it's probably, the even harder call. But I think, he's got domestic issues and probably, wants and needs a win, I'd say. So given the rhetoric that I see coming out of discussions last week, for me, they're an incremental positive.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll want to sort of tie that up with how you're seeing markets. Obviously, you've already alluded to the fact that the consumption, the area of consumption you still see as a fertile investment ground. But the market at large, given... I know maybe we have to have a conversation about the dollar. I don't know if you want to sort of get into that, but given the stimulative backdrop, relative stimulus from China, trade improving a bit, is this a good environment for emerging markets, Chinese equities in particular?
Yeah, it's we've seen some pretty significant corrections.
It has been 2018 wasn't particularly generous for Chinese
equities. Absolutely, yeah. And so you've got pretty big swaths of the market that are trading at historical low valuations. And that's, to be honest, where I'm focused. That's where I see, that's where I'm putting incremental capital into those areas where I'm still quite confident about the long-term potential of these sectors. So not surprisingly, that tends to be in the more market-sensitive areas. So areas like insurance, where I see, it's a very strong, and it, long-term story around increasing penetration. Penetration rates are, for life insurance I'm talking about, are much lower than they are in the West. As people get richer, they'll want protection, they'll want more, you know, savings type products. It's natural that that happens. And, you know, you've got these stocks that are trading, you know, you've got some stocks down to, you know, 0.5 times embedded value below book, sort of single digit multiples for what's a pretty strong growth story in the long term. And, you know, I understand some of the concerns. Obviously, there's some concerns about, you know, their investment book and their equity exposure. You know, for the companies I'm invested in, I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm also comfortable with the risks around negative spread. So obviously, as rates have come down, there's more concerns about that. You know, so the asset liability spread, you know, I don't think there's much downside to rates from here. So I'm pretty comfortable with that as well. And I think there's good room for actually premium growth to accelerate as we sort of move, you know, into the rest of the year. The other area would be the brokers, the securities brokers. And again, given weak markets, they've been weak, again, sort of historical low valuations, but I think you can paint a pretty rosy story for them in the midterm, as well as capital markets develop. You've got still got very underdeveloped capital markets. There's signs of deregulation again. Obviously, there was pretty significant regulation in the correction in 15. Yet, you know, there's talk of sort of deregulating some of the derivatives markets. But the longer term story is really just about institutional ownership of the A-share market. You know, as insurance grows, as asset management grows, there'll be greater institutional ownership and foreigners. So you've got obviously, you know, the A-shares coming into MSCI, you know, coming to MSCI broadly. That's only going to increase. It's interesting that even during this correction, northbound flows as part of Stock Connect from Hong Kong into Shenzhen and Shanghai have been steadily increasing. So I think, you know, from a low base, you'll see increasing institutional ownership of the market. The guys that I'm focused on are really about institutional, not retail. So there's good potential there. It's also worth watching deregulation of some of the equity markets as well. So, you know, it's been a pretty poor market, although Hong Kong has been a pretty fertile market for IPOs. In last year, in fact, I think there was more than the US. You know, the A-share market has lagged, but you know, the setting up of this what they're calling TIB, the Technology Innovation Board in Shanghai, I'm a bit surprised it hasn't got more airplay, because you know, if you look at the structure that they're talking about, it's more sort of a Nasdaq style market, registration based, no need for profitability, and even some of the unlisted companies that I'm looking at are seriously, you know, looking at this as a real option. So it's still early days, but just something to watch. So I guess the point I'm making, I feel that, you know, the tide is sort of turning, you know, in their favor. You've got historical low valuations, and you know, I mean, you know, as capital markets which they will, there's going to be more opportunity for these companies.
So coming back to the insurance angle, I mean, it has sort of been a well-trodden narrative that penetration, yep, there's an under-penetration in, sure, China. And, you know, it had because these stocks haven't done tremendously well. I mean, not a lot of China's done tremendously well. Right. Had sort of growth expectations got ahead of themselves? Or, you know, what has weighed on that market? You talked about the rate story, I guess, the assets they're investing in, sure, the rates have gone down. But, you know, what's led to the disappointments in that area? Because it is a great story, but it's one that's...
I do think, you know, there's concerns about profitability with lower levels of interest rates. I think, you know, it's definitely one thing. I think there's some uncertainty also, just given the correction that we've had in markets, potential bad news about what's happening to the investment portfolios.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing. You know, China Life has already had an announcement around that, so that's probably spooked, you know, the market for other companies in the space, but... I don't think that should be, you know, too much of a surprise. And also, you know, again, the analysis we've done about their equity exposure, it's not that significant. It's manageable. It's, yeah, manageable for these companies. So I'd say that's one thing. It's also...
It's sort of classic short-term issues with markets, yeah, underestimating the long-term, yeah, growth potential.
There has been some regulatory noise as well. So for the companies that have been aggressively pushing savings-type products and that sort of thing, there's been some regulatory pressure to slow that. And, okay. That noise doesn't help as well. But, you know, I'm still, you know, the underlying demand is there. And I think, you know, again, you're thinking about the government, they want people to have protection. So I think it's natural that it grows.
And then on the security brokers side, obviously it's capital will accumulate or flow that much more rapidly if assets are moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily about performance, you know, just greater participation. You know, if the A shares are included in MSCI mm-hmm. global indices, yeah. then passive investors have to go there.
Absolutely.
And security brokers. So
yeah,
do you want to elaborate on that rather than me?
No, I agree. It's kind of a different story. Another reason outside of fundamentals to be positive on China is flows. So, you know, it's, you know, here's a country that's sort of a mid-teens percentage of global GDP and has been less than 3% of global markets. We all know that has to increase over time. And that's part of the reason MSCI, you know, has included China. And, you know, it's a slow step, but it's going to definitely increase over time. But it's going to take some time because, you know, the Asian market, you know, it's still 80% retail driven. It's, you know, the growth of it becoming, you know, looking more like a Western style market where, you know, it's mostly, you know, your mutual funds, your institutional investors. It's going to be a slow process, but, you know, we know it's moving in that direction. So again, when you can sort of buy stocks at cheap valuations where, you know, that's ahead of you, and, you know, I feel comfortable increasing positions in those names now while sentiment is weak.
Looking at other areas of the consumer then, which you're keen on. I mean, I was just sort of interested. I mean, you've mentioned about the income tax breaks that are coming or
yes,
already have come.
They're here.
They're here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen, for example, luxury brands, you know, LVMH come out with some mm-hmm. really good numbers
yes.
out of, you know, on the basis of Chinese growth.
Yeah.
And, you know, does that mean that the opportunities aren't there for you? Well, there will. Does that narrow the opportunities for you? Because actually a lot of this sort of income tax saving is going on aspirational Western goods or are there domestic brands or domestic ways to play this?
It's a really interesting point. And obviously, you know, we're focused on those domestic opportunities. Our sense is definitely that there's more areas where, the domestic brands are asserting themselves. You talked about luxury. That's kind of a special case. I mean, you know, luxury globally is dominated by the European brands. It's hard to delve into that space. There's some signs of it happening, but it's more the mass type products. An example I'd give is sportswear. So, you know, obviously you saw Nike come out with strong numbers in China recently. There's the sportswear sector overall has been really buoyant through this whole, you know, this whole period. It's a big kind of sports boom that's been going on for years now in China. So you know, the obviously the international brands still dominate that premium part of the market. So your Adidas, Nike are dominating that. But you're starting to see, you know, some of the domestic brands really, you know, like I said, assert themselves. And you feel that there's less of a stigma amongst the locals with regard to those brands. So my biggest holding in the sportswear space is a company called Li Ning.
Is he the former Olympian?
Yes, exactly. Gymnast, one of the most famous gymnasts. So that's, you know, you're starting with a brand that already has pretty good recognition. But as an example, they've recently brought out a different format within their range, and it's called Zhongguo Li Ning, so China Li Ning. And it's very blatant about being Chinese, and it's actually uses the Chinese characters of China on the wear, and it's sportswear more like streetwear focused, but it's cool. And it's, you know, you see, you know, young kids wearing it, and even, you know, you probably see them on the streets here, you know, sort of, you know, wearing this stuff. So it's interesting that
I mean, I don't want to get too into pop culture. I don't know how ready you are for this, Dale, but, you know, I guess things like Adidas is a great example of mm-hmm. a brand that's orientated towards, you know, music stars. I mean, has this brand been able to do that? Does China carry those sort of...
I'm not aware of them aligning brands with any music stars.
Right.
But I can tell you, you know, this brand, you know, having, you know, visiting the stores, you see the crowd there. It's a hip crowd.
Yeah.
So it definitely has that feel. And obviously speaking to, you know, my younger analysts, et cetera, on the ground, it's definitely getting some traction, and you sort of, you know, you're seeing more acceptance of those types of brands. And it's not just in sportswear. I mean, even in technology. And I don't want to downplay Apple, but, you know, the recent disappointment in China being blamed on the slowdown. You know, I think the competition is doing a better job you know, you've got the Huawei's, et cetera, of the world, which have as good, if not better, hardware specs at a cheaper price. So I think,
maybe a bit of a rebellion against the arrest.
Some people say that, but I don't think it's that. I think it's performance of the product and more of a recognition of that amongst the consumer.
And not Samsung, it's Huawei, you would say.
It's the local guys that are in many ways innovating faster.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. And what about I mean, other areas of consumer. I mean, let's for example say sort of hoteliers. I don't know if that's sort of in the portfolio, but of course, you know, here we've got IHG with, you know, big presence. You know, what's is everyone winning, or are the domestic names front running? Performing better than those buying into the market?
I was going to say it kind of depends on the category. As things are slowing for, you know, the hotels, you know, the hotels that we look at, it's not in decline, but, you know, if you sort of look at RevPARs there, that growth is kind of slowing at the margin. In terms of who's winning, if you're talking about the budget space, it's all local. So, the leader in budget, it's a company called Huaju, it used to be China Lodging. They're still doing well. They're still a relatively, you know, the chains are still a relatively small part of the market, so there's still good growth potential there. So they're doing well. At the more upper end, the foreign brands have good names. For me, I the holding that I have in the portfolio is Shangri-La.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, have a very strong, you know, position in the market there. The luxury end, went through a period of really significant supply. But I think, you know, we're getting to a point now where clearly demand is catching up. And so I think the outlook there for something like that, which is viewed as it's very luxury, but more local, is actually still pretty good. And the travel thematic is strong.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about consumption. We focus mostly on goods, but, you know, within the services side, services actually continues to take greater share of overall consumption. And travel fits within that story, both domestically and overseas.
I mean, on that continuing on consumption, you know, healthcare is obviously another great story.
Right.
I may have looked at the wrong chart, but the numbers again seem to be pretty difficult for shares. And there aren't many, I don't believe, but the small sector though it is, doesn't seem to perform very well recently, even though of course it is a fantastic story.
Sure. No, I agree completely. I mean, there's no question that spend on healthcare is just going to continue to ramp. The sector has been through a really tough period, and it's about pricing. So there's been, really significant that the government tenders that have come through, you've seen really significant price declines into a sector which is already pretty well priced and pretty high margin. So that's clearly hit that sector. But, post the correction, things are looking more interesting, I think, just given the long-term story around growth in healthcare spend.
You're focusing, or you're looking closer at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, well, I mean, we've covered quite a lot of ground. I don't think there's anything else in the trust that you are particularly excited about that may, be an important driver of, I guess, of relative returns this year.
A realization, some certainty around trade, some sort of, stabilization in growth, which seems likely, given the measures that have been taken. Realization that, the story around consumption is still there, combined with low valuations. Generally, in my experience, that's a pretty good combination.
I would agree. And I think we would also add that seems pretty, certainly this policy change from the Federal Reserve has a nice sort of shorter term factor to add to this story. It's hard to see the dollar moving much firm from here, which is a challenge typically for emerging markets, not necessarily all businesses. But anyway, Dale, thanks so much for sparing the time to come in to speak.
Absolutely.
It's a really fascinating conversation. I guess you've got to get back to work. No holiday for you in this.
No rest for the weekend. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks again for your contribution. To our listeners, let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast, or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. But until next time, many thanks for listening.